Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome in here to the water cooler. My name is Evan John. This is 91.1 WHFC. I'll be with you for the next half hour here talking some sports. A lot of stuff going on in the sports world right about now. College basketball, baseball is here. The World Baseball Classic over to Major League Baseball as well. A lot of stuff going on here in the baseball world as opening day is 1 week away from today. Again, March Madness here as well. And also our very own Sean Donovan with his own Sports Minute like he brings to the show often. And of course, a big part of the show that is. I'll hit you with that. First, let's get things started here with Sean Donovan in the Sports Minute.
As spring sports begin their regular seasons, the John Carroll Patriots look like favorites in the MIAA Conference in baseball, led by senior Coastal Carolina commit Frank Adamaski. In girls softball, the Ballard Bobcats are set to open their season against the C. Milton Wright Mustangs, and then on Friday, head across town to take on their rivals, the JC Patriots. In boys' lacrosse, the Falston Cougars are set to take on the John Carroll Patriots on Tuesday in a highly anticipated matchup. And in track and field this week, the opening meet for Harford County teams is set to begin. That's a wrap on high school sports for this week. Until next week, I'm Sean Donovan. Have a good week.
So that was Sean Donovan. Of course, a lot of good high school sports going on here, right here in Harford County, and some more to come of that, of course, week to week here. But right now, it is March Madness time this evening. Actually, the Sweet 16 beginning this evening. First game tips off in just about a half hour here from Madison Square Garden. It's Michigan State, the 7 seed, versus Kansas State, the 3 seed, to start off our four-game slate of day one of the Sweet 16. Michigan State is the only Big Ten team left out of the 8 teams selected from that conference to make the Men's March Madness tournament. And I said it before on the show. I said it on Night Owls. I said it with my friends off air as well. We all agreed the Big Ten was a fraudulent conference this year. They just didn't build up to March Madness the way that these teams should. 8 teams made it. We didn't really have a lot of belief in any of them, except, of course, we did have faith in Maryland to win a game, but we knew Alabama would be a tough test in the round of 32, which they proved to be just that. But to make the Sweet 16, Michigan State, like I said, the only Big Ten team that has advanced twice here. They take on Kansas State at 6:30 tonight from MSG. And, of course, I'll backtrack a little bit there. Forgot that Purdue, of course, from the Big Ten, the 1 seed, gets knocked off by the 16 seed FDU, who would lose in the round of 32. But again, Big Ten teams bounced early in this tournament. I thought they might be. They were. Did I think Purdue would lose round one in the round of 64? No, I did not think that they would lose to FDU. But I knew Purdue. I did think Purdue wouldn't go very far in March Madness. I thought they'd get out of the first round, as almost every 1 seed does. But they couldn't do that. And now Michigan State stands alone representing the Big Ten tonight. They knocked out number 2 Marquette, a 2 seed in this tournament. That was a big win for Michigan State. Of course, Michigan State's head coach, Tom Izzo, he's been here before. He knows what he's doing in March. A great coach, an animated coach, not afraid to yell at his guys, get in their face and everything, but he knows what he's doing. He's a good coach. He knows how to win in March. He's done it before, and he's continuing to do it again here. I didn't think they would get past Marquette. Izzo and company figured it out. They do knock off Marquette in the round of 32. As for Kansas State, Marquise Noel, the guard for Kansas State, is the centerpiece of this team. He leads this team. Put 27 points up on the board when they defeated Kentucky in their round of 32 matchup. He's a penetrating guard. He can get inside, take it to the hoop. He's not a tall guy, but he can get inside, take it to the basket. That, to me, might be the X factor here for Kansas State. It's going to be a tough matchup for those Michigan State guards to stop Noel inside. I think it might prove to be a little too tough for the Michigan State guards. We shall see how it goes. But Michigan State's played at the Garden before. They played at the Garden this year. They did lose to Rutgers, but they know the environment they're going into. They understand Madison Square Garden, New York City. They know what they're getting themselves into. Kansas State has not been there before this year, so we'll see if that plays a factor in it. Michigan State should have a good following, fans-wise. They usually do. So we'll see. We'll see. It's a 3-7 matchup. Of course, Kansas State coming in as a 3, Michigan State as the 7. It's an interesting game, for sure, to start off our slate here this evening. But I'm going to take K-State in this one. I think Kansas State's going to win. I think they get over the hump, they get past Michigan State, and the Big Ten is once and for all wiped from the 2023 March Madness bracket. But moving on to the next one, 7:15 tip-off here, this one from Las Vegas. It's Arkansas and UConn. Arkansas the 8, UConn the 4. That tips off at 7:15. Arkansas coming off a massive win. They knock off number 1 seed defending champion Kansas Jayhawks in the round of 32. But UConn is looking like they did at the beginning of the year when they reached number 2 in the AP Top 25. That was week 6 and week 7. They were number 2 in the AP 25 in men's college hoops. I'm telling you, UConn has gotten hot at the right time here, and that's the name of the game in March. You get in, you get hot, and it's March Madness for a reason, right? It's a madness everywhere, and I think UConn is off to the races at this point. I think they knock off Arkansas and march into the Elite Eight here as, in my opinion, the best team in the Big East. So that tips off at 7:15. And then FAU-Tennessee will follow our leadoff game here, Michigan State and Kansas State. They play also in New York City, Madison Square Garden, Florida Atlantic, taking out the Cinderella FDU after FDU took down number 1 Purdue. No 16 seed has ever won twice in a March Madness tournament. That stays true. This year is the 9 seed. FAU knocks off FDU to advance to the Sweet 16. The 4 seed, however, Tennessee, they come out of the SEC. They're a powerhouse team. They're my runner-up pick. I picked them to lose in the championship game. I think every game this evening should be a good game. But if a game is going to get a little lopsided, get out of hand, I think it's this one. I think Tennessee could run FAU out of the Garden this evening. Tennessee is just more tested. FAU had a great year, but who are they playing? You know, they win their first round matchup. Their second round matchup is a game that no team that's ever faced a 16 in the round of 32 has ever lost. Granted, it's only happened twice, but they've won both a 16 seed that just barely got in. FDU didn't even win their conference tournament. It was an ineligibility thing of the team that did win going from D1 or D2 to D1. They weren't eligible for the tournament. So the runner-ups, FDU, squeak in on a loophole, I guess you could say. And that's your second round matchup going. No disrespect to FDU. That's a great team. I love their coach, Tobin Anderson, hired by Iona shortly after that loss. I loved that team. I loved watching that team. The head coach, just listening to their head coach, Tobin Anderson, it's a personality you'd love to play for. I know I'd love to play for. If I was a college basketball fan or player, rather, I would love to play for Coach Anderson. But going from a team like that, a team that just barely squeaked in, to now you have to play an SEC team, a good one in Tennessee, that is a step to take if you are Florida Atlantic here. I don't think they're going to be able to do it. Tennessee's defense, just fantastic in this tournament. One of the stories of the opening weekend of this tournament. In the round of 32, they faced Duke. Duke only went 6-for-22 from three-point land, and Duke was only able to push across 52 points in that round of 32 meeting with Tennessee. Tennessee defense just locked down in all aspects in this tournament. They look fantastic. FAU is a fast team. They can get up and down. They can score. They've shown flashes of defense, but this Tennessee defense has looked unbelievable. Looks like the best defense in the tournament that I've seen so far, for sure. They can absolutely do that again against FAU. Again, personally, I think they will. I think if any game's going to get lopsided, it's this one. I think FAU is in trouble tonight from the Garden. And then to to close out our March Madness Day 1 round, or Sweet 16, that is, it's the 3-seed Gonzaga taking on the 2-seed UCLA that tips off at 9:45 from Las Vegas. UCLA a little bit banged up, dealing with some injury issues there. It's a tough situation. They're without some of their top guys. It's something you hate to see, especially now when, you know, you've worked all season for this. You're in March, all in, chips are on the table here, and you're banged up. You're fighting through it, but they've shown they can win banged up, right? UCLA has gotten through a couple rounds here now as they face Gonzaga, a team that has been to the Sweet 16 time and time again. A very long streak of Gonzaga making the Sweet 16. They're, of course, led by Drew Timmy. Drew Timmy put up 28 points in the round of 32 versus TCU. Gonzaga trailed the Horned Frogs by 10 at one point in that game, and then Drew Timmy took over, and they came back and won that game 84-81. But it's a great game to close out day one here in the Sweet 16. I'm excited for it. I know this is one of the best sporting events all on the sports calendar all year long. This is one of my favorite times of the year, no doubt about that, because you have March Madness here, right? And then now we're a week away from opening day. I'll get to baseball next. But Gonzaga UCLA closes out our Sweet 16, day one slate. This is a tough one to pick. I'm going to go Gonzaga just because UCLA injuries, but I think it's a fantastic game. I think this goes down to the wire as well. I think almost every game here tonight does. So one more time for you before we switch gears here. Michigan State, Kansas State at 6:30. I'm taking Kansas State to win and advance to the Elite Eight in that one. 7:15, Arkansas, UConn. 8-seed Arkansas, 4-seed UConn. I'm going to take UConn to advance to the round, or the Elite Eight. And then FAU Tennessee, a 9-4 matchup at 9 o'clock from MSG. I'm going to take Tennessee in that matchup. And then to close out our slate, of course, the 3-seed Gonzaga, 2-seed UCLA. I will take the Zags to march into the Elite Eight once again. But how about the World Baseball Classic? Let's talk about that next year on the Water Cooler. So the World Baseball Classic just came to a close last night, of course. As most of you probably know, the U.S. falling just short, losing to Team Japan in the championship game. A great game, it was for sure. The U.S. drop it 3-2 to Shohei Ohtani and Team Japan. But I think this is the championship we needed. I think this is the best matchup we could have gotten. I would say probably the two best teams in the tournament. You could argue the Dominican Republic, of course, as well. I wouldn't argue back at you with that one. But as far as a matchup is concerned, I think USA-Japan was the best one we could have gotten. It did not disappoint. Came down to the last out, the last strike. And, of course, teammates Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout facing off to decide the World Baseball Classic. Ohtani ultimately gets him on strikes, which is hard to do to Mike Trout. But I wonder who, I guess advantage Ohtani for knowing his teammate, but Trout knows him too. So I guess advantage pitcher if you know each other. But it was a great game, and I mean, what a tournament, right? And of course, you know, there's countries out there where baseball is more important than it is in the United States. There's countries out there where baseball is less important than it is in the United States. And Japan being one of the countries where it's more important over there. A crazy stat for you here, just over 97% of TVs in Japan were tuned in to watch the championship game of the World Baseball Classic. That is astronomical. I've never seen that before here. Over 97% of TVs in Japan tuned in to watch Japan and the U.S. for the World Baseball Classic title. Just crazy, unbelievable to me. But what a tournament overall. Just the passion from the players to play for their countries. The energy, all the fans and of all the nations brought, selling out the stadiums. The atmosphere, you could hear it on the TV. You didn't have to be there. You could feel it almost over the television screen. I mean, the stadiums in Miami, Phoenix, everywhere around the world where pool play happens, sold out, and just fantastic atmosphere. I cannot wait till the next World Baseball Classic comes around. I really felt like postseason baseball, like it does in Major League Baseball, just every game, everybody all in. It was just a really, really cool tournament to watch, and I think it's just, it's fantastic to for the worldwide game of baseball as well. But yeah, it's a great tournament. Next one is in 2026. I can't wait for it. I'm super excited. Hope everybody else is equally excited as well. I cannot wait for it, but we'll transition again here now. Have about 10 minutes to you. 10 minutes left with you here, and opening day a week away. Let's talk some Orioles baseball. So it is almost time. The last week of spring training is here. We are a week away to the day. Next Thursday is opening day in Major League Baseball. If you know anything about me, I am super excited. That is, should be to me a national holiday, as one of my favorite broadcasters likes to say it. Every year on television, Matt Vasgersian, the only national holiday not recognized by the U.S. Postal Service. I love that line. I use it every year. I will continue to beat that into the ground. But to start it off here, the Orioles retain the top spot in the MLB Pipeline Farm System rankings as that list came out yesterday. It's the Orioles' fourth consecutive number one ranking between preseason and midseason rankings. MLB Pipeline always releases a ranking of the minor league systems in baseball preseason, which would have been yesterday, and then midseason right around the All-Star break. They released another list as well. So the Orioles retained it for the fourth consecutive time, dating back to midseason 2021. The only other team to be ranked number one for four consecutive cycles of it is the San Diego Padres. They were preseason 2018 to midseason 2019, and this ranking is new, actually. It's new. They started ranking the farm systems in 2015, and it's been a cool thing. I like it. I enjoy it. I think it's something to celebrate for sure. As a fan, I think it's important for organizations. Obviously, the good ones usually have good farm systems, but like I said, the Orioles retain it for the fourth consecutive time. It's a good thing. I mean, the Orioles are absolutely loaded. You can go up and down that list of Orioles prospects, and it is eye popping to me. If you know about the minor leaguers, if you know about the system, if you know about these guys, it is an eye popping list for me. If you go down the Orioles, just top 30, just top end of it. But while being atop the farm system rankings it's no small feat to me. I believe it should be celebrated, especially in the game of baseball, where it's so hard to grow these farm systems. I think a lot of O's fans will tell you that, you know, will say they've heard a lot more about the farm systems for years now, really. They've heard it over and over and over again. The farm system's good. The future's coming. The future's on the way. Just look at the minor league system. I think a lot of fans would say they're at the point where they're tired of just hearing about it, and they want to see that impact the major league club, which we saw. We saw last year. I mean, of course, Adley Rutschman changed this team. He changed the pitching staff, and when he got up here in May, he was an impact player, offensive, but really, really defensive to me, just how he worked with the pitching staff day in, day out. He really improved everybody of the, you know, a bullpen that was kind of just scraped together. It was a lot of waiver claims, you know, from an outsider looking in on Baltimore, just looking at the roster on paper. Some would even call it an island of misfit toys in the Orioles bullpen. That did not turn out to be the case. They were a top half bullpen in the major leagues. I credit Adley Rutschman a lot with that. And of course, you know, Mike Elias on his scouting, making these great waiver claims, as he's done so many times since he's taken over as GM here of the Baltimore Orioles. He's hit a lot more than he's missed on waiver claims. But Adley finished runner-up in American League Rookie of the Year. You have Gunnar Henderson, made an immediate impact at the tail end of the season. So much of an impact, really, you almost forget how short of a time Gunnar was up here. He came up in August. He was a September call-up, per se, I guess. But he was only here for about a month and a week, maybe. And it felt like he had been here for a long time. Gunnar came up, and he was good out of the gate. He hit the ground running. He didn't really look back. I don't expect him to look back this year either. I mean, and this Orioles team, they improved 31 games. They went 52-110 in 2021. They go above 500 on the brink of a wild card at 83-79 here in last year in 2022. Just an incredible turnaround for Baltimore. One of the better teams I've seen here in as an Orioles fan since I've started watching, really. Of course, you point to the 2014 team as the best team, which I would agree with. 2012, of course, and then 2016, the only playoff appearances I've ever seen. But I would say the 2022 Orioles, certainly the best team to never make it. On paper, it should have been 2017, 2018, but that's another story. 2022, a fantastic season for the Orioles. I'm super pumped about this team. And now, you know, as we turn the page to get ready for the 162-game grind here in 2023, Gunnar Henderson, the consensus top prospect in Major League Baseball, Adley's only going to get better. Anthony Santander, I think, is poised to have a fantastic season. He had a great 2022 campaign. It's Santander at a fantastic World Baseball Classic for Team Venezuela, and I think he takes that right in here to the Orioles. I've always been a Santander fan. I love him as a player, and what I see, you know, doing interviews and, of course, like social media kind of stuff, what I know about him, I love him as a guy as well. Santander, great person, great player, so it seems. But, I mean, I think he's poised to really break out again. He hit 30 home runs last year very quietly. To me, I think he comes back and picks up where he left off, the right fielder for the Orioles. I think really breaks out. I think he's an all-star this year. Ryan Mountcastle, too. You know what you're going to get with Mountcastle, but I believe he really takes a step forward and breaks out this year, reaches his full potential. He's been good since he's got up here with the Orioles, but I think this year he's going to be even better. The backed-up wall kind of threw him for a little bit of a loop. Last year, he flattened out his swing, trajectory issues for him. Last year, a lot of warning track power to left, just short of the warning track with the wall being moved back. All balls that were home runs a couple of years ago, but Ryan has now, in spring training, flattened out that swing, and over the offseason, too, flattened out that swing. And I think he really solves problems for himself, hitting fly balls to deep left, which I know could be frustrating. For him, you hit a ball, you know, 345, you get nothing for it, right? It used to be a no-doubt home run here at Camden Yards, but no more. So you have Mountcastle. He's going to be a fantastic defensive first baseman. He has been, and he's only getting better. Cedric Mullins, you know what you're going to get with him. He's had some, you know, splits issues against left-handed pitching. Ryan McKenna will make the roster for that. And, of course, great defense from Mullins. The O's also picked up two starters in the offseason, Kyle Gibson and Cole Irvin. Those guys both showing out well in spring training camp. This team is good. This team is good. And still people are not ready to call the O's true contenders. The official win total line for the Orioles is set at 76.5, which is crazy to me. Blasphemous to me. 76.5 wins projected for this Baltimore Orioles squad that just won 83 games, with a lot of players seeing the big leagues for the first time. Now those players have a taste of the majors. They know what it takes to win at the major league level. They know how to go about their business day in, day out at the major league level. And, of course, they've meshed well together as a team. And the highest projected win record I've seen for the Orioles from any outlet is an even 81-81. So, in conclusion, you mean to tell me this team is worse than it was a year ago? That's crazy to me. This narrative that has been built since 2000 and, I guess, 18 of the, it's just the Orioles. They're just kind of there. It's just the Orioles. It's wild to me how long that's carried over here. And they've even been in the national spotlight last year. with their big, you know, 10-game win streak. They were hunting down Tampa. They were hunting down Toronto. You know, they held sole possession of a wild card spot late in the season. People got talking about them a little bit. And now we reset the clocks. We come back here to 2023, and it's still, you know, it's just the Orioles. They'll be back, but not this year. Not yet. It's crazy. It's crazy. There's part of me that's like, what more does it take? What more does this team have to do to convince you they are for real? And there's part of me that just loves the, oh, it's just the Orioles mentality. I can't wait for the Orioles to be playing fantastic baseball by mid-May, right? Mid-May, they're maintaining this pace. And everybody's like, oh, wow, look, the Orioles are playing good baseball. It's almost like we tried to tell you for a year that they were going to do this. It's crazy. It's crazy. I certainly think they're better than Tampa. I think they're the third best team in the American League East. I can make a case to you for a second. I only have a half hour here, so I won't do that. But I think the Orioles find themselves in a late September battle once again with the New York Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays. I was talking on Night Owls with Stone Feltz here a few weeks ago. It used to be always, you know, the big bad Yankees and who's going to finish second. Maybe I eat these words, in 7 months from now. That's what sports is. Sometimes things don't go the way you think they're going to go. I'm not afraid of the Yankees. I'm not scared of them anymore. They're good. But so are the Orioles. They can go toe-to-toe with this New York Yankees squad. I'm actually excited for the head-to-head battles with the Yankees. I think they're fantastic games. I don't think the Yankees stand tall and look down on us anymore. Look down on the Orioles anymore. Look down on the AL East anymore. I just don't think that's reality. I don't. But it's the biggest thing I've seen this year that really, you know, puts your mind into perspective is that for the first time probably since 2018, 2019, we're getting out of spring training camp, and it's now no longer, wow, someone has to fill a spot on this team. Like, man, like, we have a hole here. Someone's got to fill it. Someone's going to be in the big leagues for the first time, a name you don't know. To now, it's, wow, someone's going to miss this team. Someone's not going to make this team. You know, there's too many guys here. They're too good. Someone's going to play in AAA. And when you think about that, especially if you're a big Orioles fan that's been watching, you know, that pays attention to spring training, knows the roster inside and out, loves spring training and loves the minor leagues and all that stuff, that's a big deal. We have not seen that in a couple years, and it's super exciting to see, and I'm very excited for it as well. I'm telling you, listen, this team is good. This team is good. I believe the future is now. The railroad crossing's going off. The lights are flashing. The bells are ringing. If you don't think a train's coming, that's fine. But I would strongly recommend you would get off the tracks. But that's all I got for you tonight. Time snuck up on me here. So that's the water cooler. Orioles baseball in a week. March Madness tonight. In really any second now here. The first game should be tipping off in just a minute. So thank you guys so much for listening to the show, listening to me. I'll be back same time, same place next week. Enjoy the March Madness slate, everybody. We'll see you next Thursday.